Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love it.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to the detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge like John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
Big guests on today's show. We'll check in with Oregon's spring football practice. Andrew Greif of the Oregonian is there, and he tells us what's it like to be behind the green curtain. Willie Taggart's practice is more open than maybe coaches in the past. But is it really open? We'll talk to Greif about that, about what his eyes tell him, and what Willie Taggart's saying as spring practice in the Oregon Ducks unfolds. Also on today's show, Rick Barry, NBA champion, finals MVP, former scoring champion, 8-time NBA All-Star, 5-time All-NBA team, one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history, Hall of Famer, all-around controversial guy. He'll be joining us coming up at 2 o'clock to talk about this playoff series with the Warriors and the Blazers. How much of a chance does Rick Barry give your Portland Trail Blazers? And is it possible that they could win an early game and maybe shift this series and make it interesting? We'll talk to Rick Barry about that coming up at 2 o'clock. But we start today's show like we start every show.
Free.
See a story on Oregon Live that just catches my eye, and it's only an Oregon type story. But apparently, you ever been driving along and you see roadkill on the side of the road? I have, and I bet you have as well. But apparently, there is a new bill that is being sponsored by a couple of representatives, state reps here. It's Senate Bill 372. It allows the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to issue salvage permits for roadkill. So, yeah, I guess if you're driving along and you see roadkill on the side of the road or you hit a deer, I guess what's the point in letting a deer or an elk or... And I think that's the kind of roadkill that I'm thinking about. I'm not thinking about you stopping and pulling over and picking up a squirrel. But apparently 20 other states have similar laws on the books, including Washington and Idaho. There is a roadkill salvage program. There are 1,100 permits in those states that allow people to pull over and salvage deer and elk. It does contain provisions to discourage poaching. For example, an animal cannot be targeted and then run down with your car and then used as roadkill. So if you are somebody who is out there to... Who is interested in salvaging roadkill? Well, it might be on the near horizon that you would be able to do that. My second of my three, that's an only in Oregon thing. My second of my three random things is another only in Oregon thing. Luke Jackson did not get the job at Portland State for the men's basketball coach. And a lot of people are upset about that. A lot of people are saying that Portland State, you know, hired their basketball coach, and why didn't they look at the in-state kid that everybody loves from Cresswell? the kid who's down there at at the small college in Southern Oregon. He's got success there, but I know he was interviewed for the job, and maybe we should get Valerie Cleary, the athletic director at Portland State, on the show. But I also feel like we can't, and you shouldn't be in the business of hiring guys just based upon the fact that it's going to make the public happy. I mean, I look around and I go, and maybe Valerie Cleary can answer this better than I can.
Get her on the show.
But I look at the job that she has as athletic director at Portland State, and I say she's got to hire people that first and foremost she trusts. And for whatever reason, Barrett Peery is somebody that she trusts. He's got a community college background. He's got head coaching experience at the college level. He comes to Portland State from Santa Clara. He coached at Arizona State before that. He coached at Utah. He is going to have a pipeline into the community college ranks because he's a guy who coached at a high level and national championship. Twice he coached for the national championship at the junior college ranks. The guy can get players, and he can get help right now. The balance for Barrett Peery is going to be trying to win over some of the kids in-state that are bubble kids, like bubble Pac-10 caliber kids. Isaac Bonton comes to mind, the Park Rose kid who's headed off to Montana on a scholarship. That's a kid you have to retain if you're Portland State moving on. But I think he's going to do it with community college guys. And here's why I don't think Luke Jackson would have worked at Portland State. A lot of people are saying, well, there goes the biggest opportunity that Portland State had to grab a player or a coach that could bring Nike into the fold. Phil Knight, he would have supported Luke Jackson. Nike would have supported Portland State. I don't think it's that direct, first of all. And I second of all think that if you are the athletic director and it's your backside if this hire doesn't work, men's basketball and football, those are the two hires that are important. Those are the two that matter. Those are revenue-generating hires. And Bruce Barnum, the football coach that everybody's happy that got the job, people don't remember it was Valerie Cleary who was in an interim capacity that hired Bruce Barnum. So if you're upset over her not hiring Luke Jackson, maybe consider for a second that, Luke Jackson, the model that he would have brought to, from Northwest Christian University to Portland State is at Northwest Christian University, he was benefiting from getting players who were transferring from low-level Division I programs to Northwest Christian. The competitors in Luke Jackson's, in his conference, the teams that he's playing, his competitors don't have that advantage. So I think it's unrealistic to expect that Luke Jackson would have showed up at Portland State, got those same types of players, and had success. I think it's working for where he's at. I think he needs to take an assistant coaching job at a bigger college and get more experience. But I think you're going to have a hard time hiring, even at Portland State, a coach that's coming from Northwest Christian University. He's had success there. He's a nice guy. I like Luke Jackson. He plays in our celebrity golf tournament. I liked him as a player. I like him as a person. I think he's a great father. I think he's a good coach. But I just don't think if your backside is on the line and you're at Portland State, that you make that hire and expect that, all right, I'm willing to roll the dice with a guy I don't know, a guy I may not trust, and a guy whose model for winning at Northwest Christian University may not work. My third of my three random things has to do with this United Airlines thing. Wow. United, if you didn't see this, you've been under a rock. And I think this is something that really disturbed a lot of people because we all take flights. I don't know where you stand on the United Airlines security officers, the passenger. I don't know what dog you feel like you have in the fight, but security officers yanked David Dow off a United Airlines flight on Sunday. They dragged him down the aisle, and he has been thrust into the international spotlight. The video has gone viral. A lot of people have expressed support for Dow on social media. He was flying from O'Hare in Chicago to Louisville, and he turns out he's a physician. Now, the airline did what a lot of airlines will do. They overbook. It's what they do. And there's an implication when you buy a ticket to get on a plane that you are potentially going to be removed from that plane if they oversell the flight and everybody shows up. So that's agreed upon. And we've all been at the airport where they announce, hey, We are overbooked, and if you would like a $400 voucher, please come to the counter. And someone will come up, or maybe not, and then they'll go, all right, we're now offering $800. But apparently, United Airlines just decided that they needed four seats for crew members who were flying to other locations to fly planes, and they took the four passengers who checked in the latest and the four passengers who had the least amount of status with their airline, and they singled them out and said, you're going to have to get off the flight, and you're going to have to get off the flight, and you're going to have to get off the flight, and you're going to have to get off the flight. Never mind that they were a four-hour drive from Louisville, Kentucky. They could have put their own crew in a car, by the way, and drove them. But instead, this happened on the plane.
Can't the pilots drive to Louisville? Can't they rent a car for the pilots and have them drive? Oh my god.
First of all, I love the woman who's giving the commentary. She's giving great play-by-play. The guy's screaming. He, you know, refused to get off the plane. I want to know where you stand on this. 417-7575. He's a doctor. He says he's trying to get to his shift. He refuses to get off the plane. I don't know about you, Gliss, but once four officers show up at my seat, I'm getting up and I'm getting off the plane. I'm not going to make them drag me off the plane. So, I, you know, that part of this incident, I think, could have been avoided. But to hell with the airlines for overbooking the flight and making it the passenger's problem.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, obviously, if they're asking you to get off the plane, just get off the plane. But the way they handled it is just a bad look for them.
Oh my God.
That guy's screaming. He's now hospitalized. And he has told reporters that everything hurts, of course. And I hope everything hurts. I hope he sues. The airline should change the policy.
Oh, he's going to sue him.
Yeah.
You know he's going to sue him.
What's wrong with the airlines? In what industry can you overbook? Can you imagine if they did that at a Blazer game? Hey, we sold more tickets than are available. We're going to have to ask you guys to get out of the building. Go home.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen someone get pulled off of a plane. I have actually heard someone scream like that sitting behind me on a plane, but not.
Yeah,
not
what did they scream over?
So this woman apparently had never, it was her second time on an airplane. We were flying out of Las Vegas, and her she was very nervous, and her boyfriend was kind of egging her on. I could hear him saying, like, what is that? What's wrong with the wing?
Oh.
And then we got up in the air, and she started hysterically screaming. And the flight attendants actually brought her something. I don't know what it was, a Valium or something like that. But, yeah, it was quite interesting.
Oh, my God.
F.A., what do you think?
I think it's crazy. The guy is going to get paid, which is the positive for him. But you were talking...
Stock's down today, too. That's $600 million in value for the airline.
How long is it going to be before they fully recover from this? Because this is huge. This is a very big deal. This is totally outshadowed Delta, who left so many people in Atlanta. And that was a terrible thing. So.
Why not just say... I mean, if they had just upped the ante, hey, we $400 voucher. Anybody... 800. I've been traveling and I've been like, I have to be somewhere. But when they start getting up there, I've been on an Alaska flight where they offered like $1,000 voucher. I start to go, hell, man, I'll take the voucher. And there's a line of people going to the thing.
Right.
And I know the bottom line is dollars. Let's go to the phones. Mike's in Portland. Mike, what's on your mind?
Yeah. Hey, John. The airline thing does kind of bother me. I mean, they shouldn't really take customers and make them do something they don't really want to do. But it also brings me to another point that I've had on my mind for a little bit. I haven't had a chance to kind of chime in with you on it. But it's kind of like making radio listeners listen to Mariners games or a three-hour delayed Seattle show. Like, it's kind of disrespectful for Poland fans to kind of put up with that.
Is somebody and making you listen
like
to
your
it,
banter.
Though? You know,
no,
I love that you listen
I
to the
like
show, but like
to you.
Yeah.
I like listening to the irregular guys, and I, you know, Jim Rome was a national show, which kind of had a broad appeal to it. I don't like Jim. I don't like his callers. Trust me.
Yeah.
But listening to 3 hours of the Seattle kicking game or the AAA prospects of the Mariners. It just doesn't cut it for me. I can't deal with it.
Well, you are free to get off the plane at any time, Mike. And look, I get where you're coming from. I get where you're coming from. I'm with you, and I get where you're coming from. You're preaching to the choir. You're preaching to the choir. I'm doing what I can. You can do what you can. I appreciate that it doesn't come to us like, you know. I appreciate it doesn't come to that, but let's go out to the other Mike in Portland. What's up, Mike?
Say, I don't know if you know the history of this guy, but this guy had his license suspended. He had a background with drugs. This guy that didn't get off the plane.
Yeah, he had a he was involved. He had lost his license at one point for issuing fraudulent prescriptions. Yes.
And he was on, I think he was under supervision, too. So the guy basically have some issues. All the other passengers, I mean, it was four of them.
Yeah.
They got, the other three got off the plane.
Should the airline be able to do that, Mike? Should the airline be allowed to do that?
Well, yeah, because if it's no different than you getting pulled over in traffic and the guy asks you to step out the car, you know, if he think you drunk. How are you going to refuse? So, yeah, he was out of line. He should have got off. Because in the fine print, they tell you in the fine print that they can do that.
It's true. They do tell you that. I just think the airline should find – thank you, Mike, for that. I think the airline should find another way. Like, and I get that – maybe I'm glad the guy did it, because if he doesn't go kicking and screaming, the airline just continues to do it. The woman is great. That woman, the commentary, no, look at him. Like, without that, it's just him screaming. I don't know that I would have flown on the plane after that. I think I would have got off the plane. I wonder if anybody else got off the plane, because they did allow him back on, so somebody else must have got off the plane. 417-7575, weigh in on that. And while we wait for that, Andrew Greif of the Oregonian's coming up. But before that, I tell you what today is.
Anybody know what today is?
What you talking about, Willis?
Take a shot. Take a stab. What is it? What happened? What does it mean? Tell us what today is. 503-417-7575.
It's Tuesday, April the 11th, 2017. It's a Tuesday. I like Tuesdays. I like it because it's not like a Wednesday or Thursday, which are kind of can be a drag in the sports world. I think Monday's a great sports day because we're talking about what happens over the weekend. But you know what today is for me? I was looking up the events in sports history today. And today in 1907, do you know the name Roger Bresnahan? He was a New York Giant. He was the first catcher. This is going to blow you away. To ever wear shin guards. He did it on this day in 1907. Can you imagine playing catcher without shin guards? That's crazy.
I could not play catcher. That's the one position I would never play. It's too hard on my knees. I don't understand how those guys sit like that. But yeah, doing it without shin guards, that would be a whole different ballgame.
Growing up with a dad as a professional baseball player, he made me play every position. And I did play catcher in Little League and like all the way in high school, freshman year, I played catcher. You're right. But you understand the game. You see the game. I think that's why he wanted me to play catcher. By the way, 1921 on this day, the first ever sports broadcast on the radio took place. It's kind of an anniversary for this radio station, which hasn't been here since 1921, but 10 years nevertheless. All right. Do I have time for one more? Sure. Alan in Portland. What's on your mind, Alan?
Hey, I wanted to point out that if people read the articles out there that the law enforcement weren't employees of the airlines.
Right.
The airlines, you know, overbooked. This happens every day without making the news. The guy refused to follow instructions by crew members and law enforcement. So essentially he was breaking the law. There was nothing else they could do unless they let him fly and then arrested him once he deboarded in Louisville. But it wasn't United Airlines. And I'm not a fan of United Airlines, but it wasn't their crew members that did this to the gentleman.
Yeah, but couldn't they have done it in another way? Couldn't they have said to him, hey, man, we're going to give a voucher. We're going to I get that you don't mess around with TSA. You don't mess around on a plane. Like, you don't joke around. You don't mess around. 417-7575. Here's where I stand on that. First of all, if four guys show up at your seat and ask you to get off the plane and they're law enforcement, you get off the damn plane. You don't go kicking and screaming. But I also feel like this all begins with United Airlines because it ends up on their plane and it ends with United Airlines. And the CEO is an idiot. Like, talk about a PR disaster. You don't come out and say, well, we were overbooked. You don't come out and support your employees. You come out and you apologize for overbooking the flight. And you say, we're going to look into this. And you say, this is the most important thing to me because this is a PR disaster if you're United Airlines. And by the way, United Airlines stock is down 3% today. Andrew Greif for the Oregonian. He's next.
I'm Dave Foley, and John Canzano was not one of the kids in the hall.
So this morning it was 6:17 a.m., and I don't know if this has ever happened to you. All of a sudden, I was getting FaceTimed. And I looked down, and it was Molly Blue of the Oregonian who was FaceTiming me, probably butt-dialing me. She's an early riser. But I didn't answer it. I had Bruce, what's his job over here, Bruce? Operations manager or something, Gliss? Yeah, he's nodding at me. What are you eating? Are you eating yogurt? Is that healthy?
No, it's like a Capri salad.
I love how yesterday you told me you're starting to work out?
No, it was last week, man. I'm like a week in.
I love how people, like Chop did it today. I'm on a kick. And I said to Chop, don't tell me the day that you're on the kick. Talk to me in 2 months. Can't follow every kick you guys are on.
Yeah, I'm just trying to stay a little healthy so I can run around with my kids.
That's good. It's a good reason to do it. Well, I got FaceTimed at 6:17 a.m. I did not answer it. Because if you're getting FaceTimed at 6:17 a.m. and it's a coworker, that's not a FaceTime you answer. You let it go. Andrew Greif of the Oregonian has never FaceTimed me at 6:17 a.m. He joins me now. What do you think Molly wanted?
I can ask her. She's like 15 feet away from me.
Ask Molly if she FaceTimed me accidentally at 6 a.m. Check her out going, worse yet, tell her I answered it. No, don't do that. Greif, where are you right now?
I'm in the Oregonian office, one of the many buildings downtown that has not been evacuated today.
Yeah, a lot of activity downtown. Let me ask you, Willie Taggart, how different is he than Mark Helfrich in a spring practice?
You know, under Helfrich, we saw about a grand total of 20 minutes in a non-spring game, spring practice. So kind of hard to judge totally apples to apples on what he's like around his players versus what we've seen from him. But it's been interesting to see Taggart and kind of how he spends his time during spring practice. We've watched two full spring practices. That was last Friday and Saturday, and then seen portions of the other two. You know, one moment that stands out was during Saturday's open practice. Charles Nelson, the receiver, you know, veteran guy, really thought really highly of. He took a screen pass and ran out the route. And, you know, it wasn't like it was 100%, but no one else was. It wasn't like it was like his effort did not stand out as being like lackadaisical by any means. But Taggart jumped on him and said, "Finish the damn run." And a lot of fans near me just like cocked their head back and said, "Whoa." You know, he's saying that to a guy like Charles Nelson, who's, you know, proven and experienced. And I think it caught a lot of people's attention. And the next time Charles caught a screen pass, he went considerably harder. So I thought that was really interesting. Just, you know, it kind of goes back to me is no one on this depth chart when you're going through a coaching change like this is a sacred cow, really. I mean, pretty much everybody's job could be taken by somebody else. And that was, I thought, a reminder that he wants people to compete.
I can't imagine Mark Helfrich yelling at Charles Nelson like that. I just can't imagine it. So that's probably a good change. Let's talk about the differences in spring practice. I got the email. You got the email. Some of that has gone public. I don't know how much listeners or readers care, but the media interviews are now taking place before practice rather than after. Advantages and disadvantages to that, in your opinion?
The advantages, I guess, well, it's a little difficult because if you can watch practice. Ideally, it'd be great to get reaction afterward. But I know that because they're letting us in practice basically from the very beginning every day, I think it's their way of saying you don't have to hang around an extra hour on the days you can't watch practice. I wouldn't mind hanging around. I think sometimes I'd rather get reaction afterward. So I'm not sure about the – I guess the advantage would be you don't have to wait around an extra hour. It's only 10 minutes. I think that that's – we'd obviously love more time. Last year's probably – I would say average interview after practice, the time everyone was available was at least 20 minutes. As guys would filter through, and we can't talk to assistant coaches who aren't coordinators anymore. I think the guys who offered the most sometimes of my understanding of the game were the position coaches under Helfrich. You know, and Steve Greatwood was really invaluable helping kind of understand the nuances of the O-line. So that's a little bit disappointing. Practice access, though, does help. I do feel like now we can go to these people, these players and coaches, when we do get their access to them for those 10 minutes and say, so I saw you doing, you know, this yesterday, tell me more, or why did you do that? And that is helpful.
So how does from a reader standpoint or a listener standpoint, it's going, well, I don't care if Andrew Greif can talk to the assistant coach or not. I always try to say, look, Greif's just the conduit. If you want an understanding of what's really going on in the program, that access is important. In Taggart's defense, though, what are the reasons that coaches don't want you talking to the position coaches?
Because I haven't really covered a team where that hasn't been an option, I'm not sure. Maybe it's seen as a preparation thing. I don't know. They want the guys to have more time just to not be bothered by us. I'm not entirely sure. What 10 minutes of interview time does is, you know, it kind of limits on how much time you can really get in depth with someone in terms of an interview. It's kind of, at this point, while we're adjusting to it, it means a lot of surface questions because you're trying to, you know, talk to as many people as you can to get that variety of viewpoints. But, you know, if I want to talk to four players in 10 minutes, obviously we're not going to be going, super in-depth with the subject matter. So I think that sometimes we'll have to work harder if we want these more kind of in-depth profiles or features on guys. And maybe there'll be some workarounds of that too.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian covers the Oregon Ducks. The Ducks will have a open practice Saturday at Jesuit where fans can come and check that out. Oh, aside from Willie, because I'm curious about Willie, what are the football questions for this team? Are they all on defense?
No. Offensively, you have, even though they have more returning, I would say, production and just talent, people you can count on, I still think that offensively there's, a lot of questions about the offensive line. They played pretty well, those three freshmen last year, but they're still really young, you know. That's, and especially coming into a new offense where they kind of want to run the ball more downhill, they're adjusting like everybody else. I think for Justin Herbert, you know, last year he kind of took the Pac-12 a little bit by surprise and played really well because of it and just showed off how natural his talent and his instincts were. But, you know, this year people are going to know what's coming if he's the starter again. So how does he adjust to that? But defensively, you're right. The bulk of the questions are right there. I mean, you know, 41.4 points per game, that's the million-dollar question, literally, for Jim Leavitt, is how do you fix that? And he didn't really give us a ton of specifics, but he said what you do is you start with who wants to play football. And that's not a cliche. Like, sorry for having a long answer, but I think that's really not a cliche with this team, because last year that was the question, was who actually wants to try and who has the desire to play hard. And Leavitt said that's the first thing he tried to figure out when he got in the building.
I'm curious, with the incoming players, the new Willie Taggart recruits versus the existing Helfrich holdovers, there was a rift among the holdovers between old guys and young guys. We could all see it. It eventually manifested itself. Will there be a rift between the Taggart guys and the Helfrich guys? How does Willie bridge that?
I think there's certainly always going to be uneasiness when people are coming in to explicitly take your job, as Willie has said. You know, he's recruiting guys to take the jobs of the more established players. If you're not better, then you don't play. And I think because Willie has made that such a point of repeating that over and over, there has to be some looking over the shoulder by the older guys, for sure. I mean, Brandon Schooler, who's only a sophomore, and he did that exact same thing last year. He came in and started pretty much after, like, the first three games. He said, this guy, he said, I did that to someone last year. Now I have to worry about that happening to me. So he's like, I have to be on my best. One thing that Willie, and I want to write about this too, is Willie said that at this stop at Oregon, unlike at South Florida and at Western Kentucky, he's made more of an effort to talk to the seniors, you know, the people, the players he's inheriting, who he didn't recruit. And really, you always hear the stories about coaches coming in and kind of like just sitting down a lot of the seniors and, you know, playing a lot of the younger guys who have more promise and more time to develop. He said that he's actually spent a lot more time with the seniors, and I would have to think it's to tell them, although I don't know this, but I would have to think it's to tell them, look, I value you. I want your input. Like, you're valuable here. We're not just going to cast you out. And I thought that was an interesting sign of a coach, you know, changing things from school to school.
How much can, you know, this was a 4-win team last year, and I see some of the projections have them winning as many as 8 games or whatever, but what do you think the expectation level should be for Taggart in year one?
Well, the schedule isn't murderer's row. I think that it does set up pretty well. Their first couple of Pac-12 games are Arizona State and Cal. I think that's a pretty good way to start the conference schedule with a couple wins potentially. Cal obviously has a whole new coaching staff. Arizona State limped out of last season and played really poorly when Oregon beat them. So I think that's, they could get out of the first month, or first 5 games with maybe 3 or 4 wins. I think reasonable expectation is to get to a bowl, even if it's just a very low level bowl. Getting back to the postseason is really important. The top of the Pac-12 is probably going to be pretty good again. Obviously, USC projected to be a top 3 team in most places you look. Washington should probably again be very good, but it feels like there's a kind of a soft middle in the Pac-12, and I think Oregon could take advantage of that and should be expected to take advantage of that.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian with us. All right, I'm going to cut you loose. What do you have on tap for Oregon Live? What can people read?
This week I'm going to be looking into more about kind of the logistics of how Oregon is getting, you know, its entire program essentially up 2 hours north to Jesuit for this weekend. That'll be coming later in the week. I would say check out my piece from yesterday on Jim Leavitt. You know, he's the guy who's getting the Pac-12 record salary to fix the Pac-12's worst defense. And it was about kind of how he says he has a template for what he's about to do.
Is he as nutty as he appears on social media, or is that an act?
Well, he certainly plays up that image in interviews. We only talked to him once, but he came in and I described him yesterday in my story as kind of like a human exclamation point. He just kind of is always yelling or barking, kind of on it, not on edge in a bad way, but just kind of always like a jitterbug. He just always seems to be moving, like vibrating. He does play up that quite a bit. In drills, when he's actually just talking to guys, it's just interesting to watch him work because he's very blunt with players, tells them that wasn't good enough, go back, do it again. And it seems like he's so much more serious once practice begins. I like seeing that side of it.
Greif, thanks for not FaceTiming me at 6 a.m. I appreciate it.
Watch out for tomorrow.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian, thank you. Behind the curtain at Oregon Ducks spring practice, they've got to make a bowl game. All eyes on Willie Taggart. And I think they need a quiet spring. I like the start that this spring is off to. Nice and quiet, open, let fans come in and see the team, connect with people. This has been an organization and an athletic department that has been straight-arming fans and media for the last decade. It's time to open up a little bit. And I like that they're going to be a Jesuit on Saturday and letting people behind behind the lines and let them see practice. And I think that's a good development. But yes, I'm fascinated by how it is that you pick up the entire football program and you move it for a day up to Jesuit, and then you move it back. Like, what are the logistics of that? Greif will have it. Josh is in Northeast. He's called in. What's up, Josh?
Hey, all right. So first of all, let's move forward from the airplane thing, which is what I initially...
Yeah, tell me about the airplane thing, because it's still making news. Okay. Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. The guy that called just before the Greif interview said that United's not the one that hauled him off the plane. And it was, United. Well, number one, it may not have been United that hauled him off, but who called security?
Right. United did. They said that The passenger's not been compliant.
Oh my God.
They yanked him off the plane.
Yeah, so, A, I think that's completely wrong. Okay, number one. Number two, it's United's fault because they overbooked the flight.
Right.
And the CEO was just announced as the best communicator of the year or whatever. I mean, come on. He just showed how great of a hot mess he can create more than anything.
Yeah, United's got some problems right now, and it's going to be a tough one to recover from. He should have come out and just apologized right out of the gate. He should have said, this was a very disturbing video. I viewed it myself. I'm upset at what I saw. I'm sorry that we overbooked the plane. That's something we need to reevaluate. And I'm dropping everything else that I'm doing, and I'm putting my full attention on investigating what happened in this incident. Because United cares about its customers. That's what he needed to say. And instead he said, well, you know, the passenger was non-compliant. We were just following protocol. And in the end, you got a problem if you're the CEO of United because this thing ain't going away.
Oh, my God.
Kiki, you got four armed guards at your seat. Do you just get off the plane, or do you let them drag you like
look,
that guy?
I got to be honest. I thought that was probably what was going to happen at the Adele concert when they told me to sit down when I was dancing because they said they were going to escort me out if I didn't sit down. So we could have had a very similar scene. Look, this is ridiculous. And I don't think the man's history has anything to do with this story. I saw that turn this morning, and I was disappointed to see that. You know what I mean? The smoke and mirrors. Yeah. That's too bad. But if the security people come over to me, then I would politely say, listen, I paid for this seat. This is where I need to be. You guys made the mistake. You figure it out. Don't come to me to solve your problem.
And they needed four of their own employees transported, which is why they picked off the four people who had the lowest frequent flyer status and had boarded the last.
Ridiculous.
Picked off the weak in the herd.
That's awful. Profiling. They were profiling the passengers. No, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And they... I've heard, you know, up to $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 that people have gotten for being replaned or reassigned.
Why not just have your crew drive? You know what? That's a 4-hour drive. Let's get the crew over there. Or just keep upping the ante until you get a buyer.
Every scenario of that, I mean, you didn't just make one mistake. It's like compounded by 10 times. It's ridiculous.
David's in Portland, wants to weigh in. Go ahead, David.
Hi there. What's your one thing you're missing? And I heard on the radio today on another station, he's Asian, of course. The Chinese are taking this as a personal affront.
Yeah.
They had some hits when it went from 120 million to 140 million hits in less than an hour. And I suspect now it's probably in the neighborhood of double that. So the Chinese are saying we're going to boycott United Airlines.
And United does quite a bit of business in Asia, but... It's being viewed that I didn't view it as a racial thing. I just viewed it as bad business. Like, you can't drag a passenger off the plane. You find another way.
It's ridiculous.
You find another way to get that done. I'm watching United stock right now.
Yeah. By the way, stay out of downtown if you have to come down here. I don't know.
What's going on?
You look through the window down there.
I don't look outside. I'm in a cocoon over here.
We have a view, actually, of the building in question that firefighters have surrounded right now. They are afraid of its structural integrity.
I don't see anything.
Trust me.
Oh, it's that way?
No, it's right down here. I can show you.
They're all pointing that way.
Which
way, Gliss? I trust Gliss's sense of direction. We got a woman pointing out the window over here.
It's the building down by 24-Hour Fitness. It's all businesses, but yeah, there's a threat that it's going to collapse.
That it's going to collapse.
Really?
And downtown is crazy right now.
Other buildings.
Yeah, and
so stay away from the downtown.
Yes. Yeah. Traffic is a nightmare.
Is
right
this
now.
Building okay? Because I'll stay here and do this show.
Our building is not surrounded by police as of yet.
You know what'll happen? They'll come and have to drag me out of the building.
Oh my God.
Would you ever let him drag you off the plane? His shirt was all up. His belly flab was showing.
If I believed strongly enough that I needed to be, I was prepared to let them pull me out of the Adele concert because I believed very strongly in that what I was doing was okay.
This guy's going to get paid.
He is going to get paid big time.
All right. What do you got, Jefe?
Oh, I was just talking actually in here some business stuff. Sorry about
right, no,
that.
No, it's okay. I thought you were gesturing to me. All right. Leave it right here. We got Punch It Audio coming up. Then we go to Val Cleary, the Portland State Athletic Director. And I'll ask Rick Barry, the outspoken Rick Barry, about how many games the Blazers can win in this series with the Golden State Warriors. Leave it here.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano is on the game.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 102.9 and 750, The Game.
I don't know what Hefe's talking about. That building on 5th? Apparently the structural engineers are saying they don't know if it's the facade or if that building is going to collapse. We can see that building from the studio here, and we can see that the fire alarms
are
flashing and going
the
off,
lights
Kiki.
Flashing. It's crazy over here.
We also have our street correspondent, one of our interns. We sent him down there to the scene, and we're going to have him on here right now. We're going to get Parker onto the back line, and we're going to get a report from there down on Fifth Avenue, because we can see that the fire department has it blocked off. It's the building that houses 24-hour fitness.
Yeah.
So it's kind of my gym that's in jeopardy here.
It is. And also, it's important to note that St. Mary's Academy is just a block away. And I did talk to the folks over there. They're actually keeping all the girls in the building. There was some talk earlier of them evacuating the building, but they think it's safer to keep all the girls in the school. So if your kid goes there, they're fine.
Yeah, we are following this, and we will get the latest here from the streets as Parker, our street correspondent, is down on the streets. He's been talking to police. He's been talking to fire. He is. I told him, let's find out what kind of reporter you are. If you need to get in that building, get in that building and get us a report. So I want to go to Parker here before we get to Punch It Audio, because I want to know if that building's going to fall down or not. And
you want to know if
everyone's
gonna work out,
right? Is everyone out of the building?
Yes, everyone is out of the building. I do think we have an absolute perfect vantage point from the studio here. In addition, we can actually see Parker as he's working his sources down there.
Yeah.
He's had, I think he had like 3 police officers around him. So he's going to have some good information
for us. All
right,
let's go down to Parker.
When there's big news,
I hear this.
We hit the streets. When there isn't,
hey, are we done here? Because I'm losing my buzz.
Well, we still hit the streets. Now welcome the Bald-Faced Truth Street Correspondent.
Go to Parker, who's live via satellite down there on 5th Avenue. Parker, what's the scene?
Okay, so I just talked to couple police officer Michelle Davis. Interesting story, just a little backstory. She actually has a football player. It's her son, Jackson Davis. He's playing at, College of the Siskiyous. He had offer from Oregon, but chose to go play there. But she's saying that at 11:25, a caller called in and just saw cracks in the building, and then frames, like panel frames, started falling off of the third story right below the windows. And so it's caving in, and police officers don't exactly know what they're going to do.
Have you been able to get into the building or near the building, or will they let you anywhere in the vicinity?
I'm actually standing right near the tape. A couple officers got pictures of it, and they're saying that, it's starting to cave in, and they're not really quite sure what to do at this point. TriMet's done an excellent job. They've had to reroute buses. But they're just trying to cut the stores first, but safety first. There's actually a KinderCare on the second floor of that building. They had to evacuate the kids, and now they're sitting right across the street waiting for their parents to come pick them up.
We're talking to Parker, our street correspondent, who's down on the streets here in downtown Portland on Southwest 5th Avenue. Assuming that they've got structural engineers looking at this, Parker, is it just a question mark now? Do they not know what's going on, or are people going in and out of the building at all?
So people are going inside of the building. They've taken people out at this point, but a structural engineer is on his way. He's not quite here yet. And they don't know the exact time frame. It could be, you know, 3-4 hours, or if it comes down, it could come down to the next 30 minutes is what, what these officers are saying.
Just make sure you're not anywhere near the building. Okay.
I'm clear. I'm a pretty good distance.
And I like how you led with the officer's got a kid who played football.
Well, when you say that you're interning for a sports radio station, you know,
yeah,
you know,
that's how it goes. Kiki's got a question for you. Go ahead, Kiki.
Yeah, I do, Parker. What's the mood just in general of people walking by, pedestrians, people leaving the building? What's the expression on their face? Give us an idea of what that's like.
So there's the Wells Fargo Center, which I'm right in front of. And, I mean, there's a ton of people standing here right by the caution tape, kind of trying to see what's going on. They've got it pretty well blocked off at this point. But there's officers trying to kind of answer people's questions. But at the same time, I would say that they're not overwhelmed, but they're definitely pretty stressed out.
So no one's being drug around or anything like that. So everyone's being pretty civilized with one another.
No, none of that. There's nowhere to be seen.
Okay, good. Okay.
All right, Parker,
thanks
for beating the streets for us.
No problem.
All right, there he is, our street correspondent. We'll get more from him as this develops. In the meantime, let's play some Punch It audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It audio.
Blazers beat the Spurs last night, 99-98, and this final sequence and this game winner look like you drew it up in your driveway. Punch it.
Napier makes his move. He'll catch. 5 seconds. Napier off the screen between defenders. Poked away. Ball.
Oh, he got it.
Vonley picks it up and scores. Vonley picks it up and beats the buzzer, and the Blazers have won this game.
Love seeing the young guys get after it. Noah Vonleh said Myers Leonard played a key role in that final play.
Shabazz came flashing up high. He was hot the whole game. We just wanted to isolate him and let him get in the lane, create, and go for the game winner. Somehow Myers got in his way. The ball got tipped away, and it just came right to me, laid it up, game.
There it was. Nice little pass. Myers Leonard with the assist and Noah Vonleh with the game winner. Gliss, what? He's just shaking his head.
Myers
just
Leonard.
Like the fact that he's like, he kind of slipped up and said, you know, he got in the way. It's like,
did you see?
And it's like the one, you know, it's like the one good thing that Myers has done all year, and it's a ball that went off of his knee.
He passed it. That's a pass. He redirected it. LaMarcus Aldridge, speaking in the other locker room, says he's not too worried about losing this game. Punch it.
Nah, it's a different level. You know, once it starts, you know, everything starts. So we just got to, you know, just keep fine-tuning things, just, you know, keep trying to get better every night, and then, you know, just turn it up, you know, when it starts.
Charles Barkley, meanwhile, says that people are sleeping on the Blazers. Punch it.
You're sleeping on the trail.
I'm not sleeping on them. I just think
you're sleeping on Golden State.
I'm not sleeping on
Golden State.
You're
sleeping on a team that's got the best record in the NBA for the last 3 years. You've been sleeping on it for 3 years.
And I'm going to just tell you something. They put all them little guys out there, they're going to get
the ball. Who's the guy that's going to maul them, though? There's nobody
around. How you pronounce his name, Ernie?
Nurkic. Thank you. A guy we can't pronounce his name, you can't say.
I call it Nurkic is going to, he can really play.
He's made a big difference for Portland. He really has.
Because they just needed somebody to get some easy baskets instead of relying on McCollum and Lillard just shooting jumpers. He was making a big difference. And he's going to be a handful for those boys, for the Warriors down low.
I just don't see that going at least six like you see it going at least six.
Well, we can disagree.
No, we do.
We do.
Charles Barkley, he is bearish on the Golden State Warriors. He has been for years. He hasn't liked the Warriors. He has downplayed them. And I think this is more about the Warriors than it is the Blazers. Yusuf Nurkic, let's talk about him for a second, because here he has this non-displaced fracture in his leg. And I've talked to doctors about it. I've talked to people who have a non-displaced fracture about it. I've talked to physical therapists about it. I can't find anybody who thinks it's a good idea for Yusuf Nurkic to play in this series. The Blazers are not going to win this series. And this is the kind of thing where they can say what they want about, hey, he has no ability to re-aggravate this. It won't extend his recovery time. You can say all those things. But when we're talking about a 7-foot, 300-pound guy, We're talking about a different animal here. Given the history in this market with big guys, there is no way Yusuf Nurkic should play in this playoff series. And you're nuts if you think he should play. This is all about selling tickets. The Blazers would like you to buy playoff tickets. That's why in that news release when Nurkic got hurt, they said we'd reevaluate it in 2 weeks. They didn't say he was going to be back in 2 weeks. A lot of people read it as, oh, he'll be back in 2 weeks. Be back for the playoffs. No. It just means after the Blazers sell you some playoff tickets, they're going to announce Nurkic isn't going to play. Draymond Green looked over at the Blazers. He says they're a different team than they were a year ago. Punch it.
They're a different team since the last time we played them. Obviously, we don't know if Nurkic will be back or not, but they're also a different team with him in it. But they're playing with a lot more confidence. You know, they're feeling really good about themselves, so definitely want to check, you know, some of their latest games out to kind of see, you know, what they're doing as of late.
I do think since the All-Star break they've played better, but I think they're a different team than they were 2 weeks ago, or, you know, when Nurkic was healthy. They were more interesting then. I still don't think they can beat the Warriors in a series, even at their best, even with no Kevin Durant. What does Nurkic add to the Blazers if he's healthy and plays? Draymond Green tried to answer that.
I mean, he's a good player. You know, you add a good center in there with, you know, that the guards and wings that they have. You know, and I think it, you know, it makes them for a much better team. So, you know, he fits well. He can score inside. He's good in the pick and roll. You know, so I think that's helped him out a lot.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see a big guy in a playoff series against the Warriors. But like I said earlier, it should not happen. You tell me if you agree or disagree at 417-7575. Meanwhile, in Major League Baseball, developing story, Anthony Rizzo, walk-off hit to beat the Dodgers. Punch it.
And Utley's playing about normal depth, maybe a little deeper.
Swinging a line drive down the left field line. Base hit. Cubs win. Anthony Rizzo with a game winner. Lining a single down the left field line. And the Cubs beat the Dodgers.
Cubs beat the Dodgers. Bigger thing was, yes, during yesterday's show, Kiki says to me, I'm a bad fan. I should be in Chicago because they had the banner and the trophy coming to Wrigley.
It was.
Weren't you there? Are you,
I should have been.
Are you really a Cubs fan?
I know. I wish I could have been. I was there in spirit, but oh my goodness, it was cold. I was texting with some friends who were there and it was brutal. And I did want to throw a little bit of shade the Cubs' way. I don't know if anyone watched that ceremony, but you can tell the Cubs are not used to raising banners. They had a little problem. They couldn't get the banner. It was still rolled up, and Billy Williams was, you know, launching it up the flagpole, and it was still all, it wasn't out, and then it happened again, and there was audio technical problems when they were singing the national anthem. So celebrating World Series is not something that the Cubs are familiar with, so they need to work that out a bit.
And they're like, you know what? We're here to play games. We're not here to raise banners. Rizzo, though, talked about it.
It was amazing. I didn't know what to expect, and a lot of emotions seeing the video and us raising that flag. It's amazing. The crowd was amazing. The fans deserve that.
How did you learn you're going to be the guy to carry in the championship trophy onto the field?
They told me when I came in today, and I don't know. I've been a little emotional lately for some reason, just thinking about all this and what it means to the city and the fans. So when they told me that, same thing, just emotions kind of ran a little bit, and just what an honor that is.
What an honor that is. And Rizzo, is that the right guy? Should he have been the one to,
you know, that's interesting.
Do the honors?
I was curious about that, too. I don't know. I thought it would have gone to Chris Bryant. But and you could also make a case for Ben Zobrist since he, you know, hit that big hit in Game 7. So look, it didn't really matter, but I did wonder what was kind of behind that.
You don't think it mattered? Like, or is there a guy who's more iconic than others as, you know, this is the guy?
Well, I just think Chris Bryant, because he was MVP. I mean, yeah. So I think that, you know.
How about Theo? Theo should have raised the banner?
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded seeing Theo. Yeah, not at all. I didn't want to see any of the Ricketts do it. I think it definitely would have. Theo would have been cool. I would have been cool with that. I was fine with all of it. I just was kind of curious as to how they picked him.
I also think, you know, when you look across baseball, there wasn't a better story for somebody winning a World Series. Does that now pass to the Cleveland Indians? Are they now the team, like the sweetheart, the lovable losers?
I think they are. I think they're the sentimental favorite. And I think they just got better in the offseason. So, you know, I think it's Cleveland's year, honestly.
Tony Romo with the Dallas Mavericks. Apparently, you can say that this is publicity driven. Of course it is. Dallas Cowboys quarterback who has walked away and now is a television analyst is apparently getting ready to suit up for the Dallas Mavericks. And I got some video of him in practice. And here's Romo talking about, you know, why he made the decision to walk away.
Well, yeah, I can tell you right now, dude. I mean, I could play tomorrow. What you find is I'm making this decision with the choice to be able to play as well. You know, it's not that different than the fall. You know, I wish I could tell you unequivocally 100% for the rest of my life I'll never play any sports at all, you know, but I just, I don't envision coming out.
He is done, and he's in practice today with the Dallas Mavericks, limited to practice. By the way, he can go into team meetings. He can go into pregame introductions. He will not play in this game, but I saw a video of him coming off a screen, catching a pass, shooting a basket, and scoring over Dorian Finney-Smith. It's a career highlight for Mark Cuban and a career lowlight for Finney Smith, who got scored on by a TV analyst today. Is this a good idea or is this the worst idea ever?
I think it's in uniform. It's a little bit of both. I mean, I'll watch. I mean, I want to watch this just because, you know, I also look at a crash when I drive by it on the road. So I don't know if that makes me good or bad or creepy or what. But I wonder why could they not give him like a 1-day contract so he could actually come into the game? Because he can't actually play. He can do all the team stuff, but yeah.
You want him to play in this game? Because the players would just love this.
Look, scrub time. Bring him in with 2 minutes to go. The place would go bananas. I mean, it is. It's a complete publicity stunt. But if you're going to do it, you might as well go all in, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know all the rules. I don't understand all the...
He kind of looked like a good athlete, catching the ball, shooting, all that, you know, like in one moment.
Well, you would think that if you could throw a football, you could shoot a basketball.
Can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
There you go. That's exactly right.
He will not play in the final home game again, but he took part in a team photo. He took part in the shoot around today. He will participate in team meetings. He will warm up. He'll be introduced. And Mark Cuban, this is a Cuban thing. And Romo, see, I get why Romo wants to do it. It's kind of like he gets to say goodbye to the Dallas fans. It's cool. It makes him feel special. I get why Cuban wants to do it. It's publicity. But I also am wondering about the NBA players who are going, you know, I think this is different than a Michael Jordan taking batting practice with the White Sox, you know, or Kevin Costner coming in and taking batting practice with the Detroit Tigers. I just think, you know, if you're an NBA player, would you be mad at this or would you be like, this is the coolest thing ever? Here's Romo.
I don't know that I would have a problem with it because I don't think he's really going to compete. You know, I think if they did throw him in, I think it would be hilarious. You know?
Fan appreciation night.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see the harm in it. I mean, he's certainly not going to, I think, drive it to the hoop. I think that would be a foolish thing to do because any player's going to.
How many minutes could he play without embarrassing himself?
Honestly, I wouldn't give him more than two. Just throw him in at the end.
Two trips down.
Just throw him at the end, you know? get your scrubs out and put him in.
Now I kind of want to see him play because I want to see somebody dunk on him.
Yeah.
Hefe, what's up, man?
I guess Romo played high school ball with Caron Butler, and Caron Butler was interviewed, said he could easily play NBA ball.
He's the all-time leading scorer in his high school in Wisconsin. I don't know, though. He's 37. There's guys in the NBA at 37 who are NBA players who can't play anymore. They're good players.
Well, and how many surgeries has he had? The notion, there's one thing about, I guess, being on a football field, but running up and down on a hard basketball court when you have a bad back, I just don't see how that's physically possible.
I respect him. I respect the NBA players. I respect everybody who's a professional athlete. I just think it does a disservice. Like when Jordan tried to play baseball, I was like, that's ridiculous. Tebow trying to play baseball, he's not going to make it. But, you know, to this one-time, one-off thing as a fan appreciation night, maybe I shouldn't be so hard on him. JC's in Vancouver. What's up, JC?
Hey, so let me just say, I want to talk about Nurkic for a second.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Jusuf Nurkic fan. I believe that he single-handedly turned around the Blazers' fortunes this season. They'd be dead in the water. They wouldn't be sniffing the playoff spot if he wasn't there. And I'm excited. I agree with Pork Chop's analogy a couple weeks back about how he's the next, he's like a young Arvidas. So he can do great things for this team if they take care of him. You know, so I 100% agree with you that, that you got to think long term. I do not think you should play in this series, especially with how cursed this franchise is with big men, like you said. So just want to say I agree with you, and I want to hear your thoughts off the air.
Yeah, let's err on the side of caution here. And here's the thing that I thought. Like, I was initially really skeptical that this trade could change anything because I thought he's a project. But 33-16 is not an accidental thing. When you score 33 points in an NBA game and get 16 rebounds, it tells me you can play. Now, you know, is that your greatest night in your history? Maybe. Or is it a sign that, hey, this guy could average a double-double? Maybe. But here's the thing I don't want to happen. I don't want Greg Oden's knees and Prisbilla's ruptured tendon and Bill Walton's feet. And I don't want all of those things to be the story when it comes to Yusuf Nurkic. Let's go to Charlie in Vancouver. What's up, Charlie?
John, first of all, eye test from day one. Nurkic can play. The touch passes he was making from inside of the post back out. Encourage Lillard and McCollum to use him in the pick and rolls. And so there's a certain trust there that's necessary between guards and posts to actually get the ball. And he can do a lot without the ball. What shocks me is his block shot. I didn't see that kind of athleticism, but he actually is a quick, quick jumper. And man, can he finish on the pick and roll dunking the basketball. But Caron Butler, I've lost all respect for you as an analyst, buddy, unless you're just really being nice to your buddy, because we all seen Tony Romo run, and you and I both know, John, you can't be slow and play defense. And he's not NBA slow. He's human being slow. So when you get out there, he could not guard one guy. You said how long could he play? If they could play zone, he could play for a couple minutes. If he had to play man-to-man and they wanted to embarrass him, they would every single time.
What would happen is his team would be taking a shot, and somebody would have to yell, "Go, Tony!" And he'd take off running on defense to get back as the ball was in the air. Leave it here. Valerie Cleary, she passed on Luke Jackson, and she made her hire. She hired Barrett Peary to be her next men's basketball coach at Portland State. We're going to talk to her about that, plus the job. She's new on the job. How is she doing? We'll check in with Valerie Cleary next.
Hey, Portland, it's Jim Brewer. And this is Ozzy Osbourne. And I don't know what he's talking about. But you listen to John Canzano. Hey, Johnny Canzano on 750 The Game. Hey, Johnny, tell it like it is, huh?
Rick Barry's coming up. One of the 50 greatest NBA players of all time. Also, Valerie Cleary, the athletic director at Portland State, is in front of us. Dre has called in. What's up, Dre?
Jay, if your big man can go, if he can play, you play him.
No.
Period. You play him. Next year is not a given.
Are you new here?
For the future, you already are. You're here. You're in the playoffs. So you're going to take the playoffs and be like, oh, well, we're not going to play our guy, though. We're going to wait for next year. Anything can happen during the summer.
Dre, he's got a broken leg. He has a fractured leg.
If he can go, you play him.
Dre, it's
if
like
he
you.
Can go,
Sam Bowie,
can go,
Bill Walton, Greg Oden. Dre, are you new?
All I'm saying is, if he can go, you play him. You can't keep going back to Greg. Oh, and then Bowie and all these.
Yeah.
He's a different dude. You're in the playoffs. You can't be like, oh, we're going to build for the future. Anything can happen over the summer, man. He can go swimming. A shark can bite his foot off. You never know. Take advantage of the moment, right? Don't we tell our kids that? You take advantage of the moment. If you can go, you go.
I also say,
not come back around again.
I also say, look both ways before you cross the street. I say, that don't just run into the street here.
Thanks, Jack.
Dre, appreciate the call always. He says, if you can go, you go. Where do you stand on the idea of the Bosnian Beast suiting up in the playoffs? 417-7575. Valerie Cleary is the athletic director at Portland State. All she did this week is hire a basketball coach. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, John?
How many phone calls, how much excitement about Barrett Peary?
Oh, there's so much excitement. Even right now, I was responding to an email from one of his former university presidents he was just saying how great his time was with Coach Perry and that he's so excited that he'll be here at Portland State. So, I mean, it's just a testament to the type of guy that he is at each place that he's been. So we're looking forward to him doing the same thing here at Portland State.
You made a shrewd hire in Bruce Barnum, the football coach, and people don't remember that. Maybe they don't remember. You were there as the interim athletic director. You gave the guy the job. He did a good job with it. Are you hearing criticism now with this hire like you did with that one?
You know, I think no matter the situation, you're always going to hear some criticism. I mean, Jen Cohen's getting it up at UW right now for her hire. But I think it just is the nature of the beast in regards to coaching. You know, everyone has their horse in the race. And, you know, you got to go for what you think is the best fit for your program, your university, your city at that moment in time. And so I think we do the best that we can do, and we always make sure we get the best fit that we can.
How much will the Viking Pavilion help this basketball program?
Oh, I mean, it's tremendous. I mean, even just with some of the interest from the candidates in regards to our basketball program, the construction of the Viking Pavilion shows the university's commitment and investment into our men's basketball program, our women's basketball program, of course, volleyball. But what people don't know is that it's not just the arena. I mean, we're going to have a new sports medicine area with OHSU. It's creating some new academic space, new weight room. So it's really a benefit overall to all of our programs. But definitely, you know, our basketball and volleyball programs get to take full advantage of that entire construction project.
How many seats? Because I put 5,000 on Oregon Live, and other people said, no, it's not 5,000. Do you know yet?
Yeah, it's actually 3,000 seats for our games. So originally back, you know, 5-6 years ago when the original idea started, we were really hoping, well, the plan was to have about 5,000. When we went through and evaluated what's the best use for us, that 3,000 number is really our sweet spot. It's kind of a unique size for the Portland metro area. It's also kind of, it creates that really tight dynamic, almost with what Gonzaga has going on up there, where you want it to be a action play, you know, action-packed, loud, rowdy place in order to play your games there. So we settled on the 3,000 seat, and I think it's going to be a perfect size for our arena.
You've got people, I'm sure, telling you should have hired Luke Jackson. Did you interview him?
Yeah, you know, I had the chance to speak with Luke on many occasions. I mean, obviously here in Oregon, he's a hot name for sure, and he's done great things down at Northwest Christian. So I had the chance to speak with Luke amongst others as well. Really nice guy, and I'm hoping that our paths will cross sooner than later.
Valerie Cleary is the athletic director at Portland State. We always say that, you know, men's basketball and football are the revenue generators. How badly do you need those two entities to be successful to win?
I think, you know, with any university, I mean, you really are looking towards your football and men's basketball program to really kind of get the name out there. That tends to be what the public follows. And then from their success, I think it opens the doors for people to start following some of our other programs as well. Obviously, with the arena, we have an investment in that, so we really want to see some good success from those programs that will be in there. But definitely, I mean, it's what, you know, is talked about on the news each night. It's what, you know, folks are having the heated debates about on your show. But definitely, you know, football and men's basketball tends to be the ones that get the attention to at least open the doors for other sports.
I'm going to ask you, you know, a CEO question, because United Airlines had this terrible thing with this airline video. I'm sure you've seen it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The CEO comes out right away, and his response right away, not so good. He's now come back out just a few minutes ago, and he's saying they're taking full responsibility and they're working to make it right. You're in that position that you're in charge of things that maybe you don't have control over it. How do you pay attention when you see PR disasters like that to, like, maybe help you if you ever have to deal with something like that?
Completely. And, you know, my first thought when I saw that is they need a Mike Lund in their life. You know, anytime I'm going to be speaking about anything, I always make sure I talk to Mike Lund, our sports information guy. And, you know, he makes sure that, you know, we're all kind of on the same page and you're ready to talk about whatever the topics are. And you do a great job with kind of giving the heads up as well. But, I mean, those things happen. And you got to really depend on your staff at all levels that they're going to be representing your company, your university to the fullest and whatever they do day to day. So, yeah, he definitely has a situation on his hands.
Valerie Cleary is our guest, athletic director at Portland State. I wrote it last summer that we didn't have enough women in positions of decision-making positions in sports in the state. You're now sitting as a full-time athletic director at what is enrollment-wise. Are you guys the largest university enrollment-wise? Are you there yet?
Yeah, I mean, for our four-year schools, I mean, outside of Portland Community College, Portland State has the highest enrollment.
So what do you say to young women who come to you and say, Valerie, do I want to be in this business? Is it easier to get into the the Fortune 500 business world or in athletics, what kind of career is waiting for me?
Yeah, I think there's so many options for young women in sports and athletics. I mean, people don't realize sometimes that it's a full operation. You have everything from, you know, our compliance, which a lot of lawyers go into, you know, athletics compliance, to our marketing, our development offices, you know, but then also from the coaching angle too. So, I mean, depending upon what area they find their passion is, I think there's a lot of opportunities. You know, I'm always encouraging young women to definitely explore this as a career possibility for them, just because I think it is important with having so many female student athletes, but I also think it's equally as important for our male student athletes to see people different than them or in different roles, you know, that they could aspire to.
All right. So Bruce Barnum in football and, you know, you've got your Peary as your basketball coach. What's the next thing you have to do as athletic director?
Well, the next thing is we need to get this pavilion built. So it's going. So once we could cut the ribbon on that thing, I think all of us will breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief. You know, that's the big projects that are going on for us. But then again, it's the constant, you know, work to really get our programs the resources they need to be successful. So working with Ty Hallen, who's our associate AD for development, you know, really working with him to increase kind of our connections out in the community to help generate that revenue, whether it's through philanthropic gifts, sponsorships, ticket sales, whatever it might be, because the more revenue we could bring in regards to those things, the better we could prepare our coaches and our student athletes for being really competitive within our conference.
That building, compare it to other arenas in the Big Sky. I mean, does it give you the best building or what are the other best buildings?
I'm biased. It's going to definitely be the best building. I mean, we're definitely going to be the newest building. I think it's going to really set us apart from everyone in our conference. We are definitely going to be the school people are trying to catch up to in regards to our arena.
Do you have to share it with academics or is it set aside for athletics during season?
Yeah, no. So actually, we have a really great relationship with the university. So there's classroom spaces that will be there during the day for just general academic classrooms. On our concourse, there's, you know, it's scheduled to have like a coffee shop and some lounge spaces. So very similar to a student union building that you could come in, have a cup of coffee, study, that type of thing. So it is going to be a shared use facility. Obviously, we have a great relationship with OHSU that they'll use it to do some community health fairs, their commencements, those kind of things. So it will be a really, really active building. Obviously with us, you know, we'll have some priority in regards to scheduling for our competitions and practices and so forth, but it'll be a really lively arena that's going to have a lot going on in it day to day.
All right. Valerie Cleary, Athletic Director, Portland State. We wish you the best. Thank you for making time.
Thank you so much, Don.
There she is. A lot of people angry at her. She did not hire Luke Jackson. She interviewed him. She talked with him. She did her diligence. She didn't hire him. A lot of people think that Nike would have jumped on board and helped Portland State if Luke Jackson were in the fold. And to that, I would say, if you're Nike, you should be supporting not just Oregon, but Portland State and Oregon State. And they have done that. When you look at what Nike and Phil Knight did for Oregon State, not just with uniforms, not just with the retention of Pat Casey, but just the support of the athletic department. I believe Pat Casey, you know, when Notre Dame was talking to Pat Casey, he was Nike and Phil Knight were instrumental in helping Oregon State retain Pat Casey. So I don't think a coach necessarily is the golden ticket for support from Nike. I do think that there are a lot of people, and I don't know what is it about this state that we get this way, who are very provincial, who want Luke Jackson because he's familiar, who want Luke Jackson because he reminds you of good times with Oregon basketball. I'm willing to give Valerie Cleary enough rope here. Like, hey, this is her backside if it doesn't work out. And she's the one conducting the interviews. If she interviews Luke Jackson and goes, nah, sorry, you came in second, and goes with Barrett Peary, who came on the show yesterday, then, you know what, I'm willing to say, all right, let's see how this goes for you. And given her hiring record, like a lot of people would have come in as athletic director when she was here the first time and just flushed the entire coaching staff when Nigel Burton was fired. Instead, she said, all right, Bruce Barnum, it's your job. She saw something in Barnum. She saw something in Barrett Peary. They've got the pavilion. Now, if you're a Portland State student and you listen to this show, you got to tell me, because I don't have a pulse for this campus. I drive right through the heart of the campus every day. I look around. I don't know these students. A lot of international students I see walking up and down the streets here in downtown Portland who go to Portland State. I don't know if they care about sports. I don't know if they'll go to games. I've been to football games where they don't attend. When Jerry Glanville was here, he talked about like making a class, making it a required class for all freshmen to go to a football game, getting class credit. I don't know what it's going to take to get people to go to games, but I guess you could start with winning some games. Bruce Barnum in football and Barrett Peary. And Barrett Peary, that's a name I have a hard time with. Like, I'm not great with names anyway, Kiki. But it's Barrett with one T. And then you want to say Perry, but it's not. It's Peary. P-E-E-R-Y.
That's funny as you say that because I was writing it and I was thinking to myself, I'm gonna have to write this because I'll forget it.
I want to write Barrett with two T's and then I want to write Perry. It's not Barrett Perry. It's Barrett Peary. All right. So there you have it. And Valerie Cleary, you know, we wanted her on the show. We got her on the show. That's good. Rick Barry's coming up. 1975 NBA champion. Finals MVP. Scoring champion. Blah, blah, blah. One of the 50 greatest of all time. He's got a big ego. All right? You got to give him a wide berth, but he knows a lot of basketball. And I'm going to ask him a couple things. One, should Yusuf Nurkic be playing? Should the Blazers be jimmy-jacking around with this at all? Rick Barry will not sit on the fence on that topic, I can guarantee you. I don't know what he's going to say, but I know he won't sit on the fence. And then the second thing, I'm going to ask him how many games in the series the Blazers win. And I don't know. He might say zero. But I know he knows basketball, and I know he knows how these teams match up, and I know he knows playoff basketball. So Rick Barry is in front of us. In the meantime, if you are somebody like myself who has insurance needs, you've got a home, you've got a vehicle, you've got a family, maybe you need life insurance, automobile insurance, homeowners insurance, Rusty Houston, he's my farmer's insurance agent. He does a great job, and I've talked about him on this show before, and I know he's a listener of the show because that's how I met him. And also, Rusty, you know, for me, it's I know that I need automobile insurance. I know I need homeowners insurance. I know I need life insurance. But it's how do these things fit together and how do I save money and where am I protected and where are my liabilities? Rusty took a look at what I was doing. He found out that my existing insurance agent hadn't really looked at the big picture, was charging me too much money, and I didn't quite have the coverage that I could have if I had gone with Rusty Houston, Farmers Insurance. So all you have to do is call Rusty and say, hey, can you take a look at my insurance or here are my needs or here is my situation? Rusty Houston's my go-to. Make him your go-to for insurance as well. His phone number is 503-372-9543. That's 372-9543.
So I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750, The Game.
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 1029 and 750, The Game.
Rick Barry is outspoken. He speaks his mind. The name of the show is The Bald-Faced Truth. And I like bringing Rick Barry on because he tells the truth. You may not want to hear it, but Rick Barry's going to give it to you anyway. Pro Basketball Hall of Famer Rick Barry now with us. Where are you today, Rick Barry?
I'm actually with my old teammate Clifford Ray down at his place in outside of Orlando in Florida. So, you know, I spent a lot of time with Clifford. He and I are like brothers. We do a lot of fishing together and kind of exciting. He just got done watching my son finish his basketball career in college, and now his son's getting ready to start at SMU, and he's got a chance to be a pretty darn good player. You keep an eye on him, Everett Ray.
I like to hear that you're hanging out with a teammate because I don't know if these guys today have those kinds of relationships. Do you see some of that? Where do you think you guys were closer in your era?
I don't know. These guys lead a different lifestyle. It's a totally different world that exists for them. Everything is just so dramatically different from the training capabilities that they have and all of the things that are available to them, the way they travel, the kind of money that they make. I really can't even relate to it. The only thing I can relate to is that you're still playing the same game with the same size ball, with the same size basket. And so that hasn't changed. And fortunately, the only teams that win championships are the ones that actually play the game the way it was meant to be played.
Rick Barry with us. There was a story recently about LeBron and Steph Curry and LeBron not liking Curry and Westbrook not liking Curry. Do we get too caught up in that, or do you think that that's stars being prima donnas, not liking each other? Did you like the other stars when you were playing?
Okay, first of all, I went out there to kick their butt, okay? I didn't go out there to make friends with them. And Clifford Ray always jokes at me, calls me B. He says, B, did a good job of that. It's one of the reasons why I was an MVP of the league in 1975 when we won the championship. For whatever God knows reason, they turned the voting for the MVP of the league over to the players. Well, that was the silliest thing in the world to do because personalities come into play. Hell, not only did I not finish first, they didn't finish second. That best year of my career by far. I mean, it was crazy. I was the only unanimous choice by the writers for the All-Pro team, which kind of tells you that I think I might have won the MVP award had it voted by the writers. So, it's just a different world that exists. And I mean, who knows? I mean, who cares? I mean, really, does it matter if LeBron likes to, who cares? I don't care. I mean, all I care about, I just want to see these guys play great basketball. That's what I love, greatness. I love watching great athletes perform. I was impressed with Sergio Garcia in golf, what he did to come back from in the woods in 13 and comes back and winds up winning his first major. That was great, even though I always root for non-foreigners. I always root for the Americans. But, you know, Sergio, after he's been around forever, I was pulling for him, and it was great to see that. So I love watching that. I love Tom Brady, what he did. I mean, anything in sports, I love watching. I love greatness in anything. And so who cares whether these guys like somebody or not? I mean, now we're getting into things. Talk about how the players have changed and things have changed for the players and the way the game's played by some of these teams. Well, same thing in the writing. The writers used to go and drink with guys and do stuff before. They never wrote about anything that happened away from the game. Now everybody's looking for the sensational story to get front news, you know, stuff on CNN and every place else and Fox News and whatever that has nothing to do with basketball.
Rick Barry with us, Hall of Famer, also your 1975 NBA champion and Finals MVP. The Blazers have got this series with the Warriors. First of all, Yusuf Nurkic, who's an interesting player for them. He's got a fracture that's non-displaced. The team's not saying if he's going to play or not. If you're the Blazers, do you entertain the idea of playing this guy, or do you shut him down?
I would never take a chance with somebody that you knew was valuable to your future to play in a series that chances are pretty remote that you're going to win, even if everything was going your way. I look to the future.
What about this series? If you know, when you look at that, these two teams, how many games reasonably can the Blazers, you know, if the Blazers fans are looking at this series, how many games, Rick Barry, think the Blazers can win?
You know, if I knew that stuff, hell, I'd go to Las Vegas and make a fortune. I would never bet on an NBA game, and it was a sporting event. I mean, I know what it's like. I mean, that's why you play the games, because the craziest things can happen. You just never know. So, obviously, they're going to go out and take the old proverbial one game at a time and try to do as best as they can. I mean, if you're going to look at it just from a observational standpoint from the sideline, you figure, well, if the Blazers could win two games in a seven-game series, that would be wonderful if they could do something like that. I mean, who knows? I mean, I have no idea. You know, if Lillard, you know, can go out and score 50 points every time, maybe they can win more than that. I don't know. But it's a formidable task. There's no question about it, to be able to beat the Warriors. Warriors are a really outstanding basketball team, and I think they'll have a very difficult time beating them. Of course, it'll be a major upset of the playoffs to start with if they're able to pull off a victory in this series.
We're talking to Rick Barry, 8-time NBA All-Star, one of the 50 greatest players to play of all time. The Russell Westbrook, James Harden MVP race has been interesting, but I have to know what you think of what Westbrook has done this season.
It's a remarkable accomplishment what he's done. I mean, you know, but I don't think that you want to, you know, necessarily go and compare it to what Oscar did. What Oscar did was at a different time with different players, a lot of great centers. I don't recall the last time he played that Westbrook drove in against Bill Russell or Wilt Chamberlain or Nate Thurman or a whole bunch of other great centers that might have made it a little bit more difficult for him to get some of those dunks and some of those scores that he got. Not to take anything away from what he's accomplished, it's a remarkable accomplishment. And a big difference also is that, you know, the travel is so much easier for these guys now than it was back in the days when Oscar did it. The other thing is he was trying to break the record. He was trying to get triple doubles. Oscar was just kind of playing the season, wasn't he? Wasn't even thinking about it. So So, yeah, there's a lot of differences between it, but take nothing away from what he accomplished. It's an amazing accomplishment to play at that level, especially for a guard to get the rebounds. That's the part that, to me, is so incredibly impressive. You know, scoring 10 points or more, you know, obviously he scored a lot of points, but scoring 10 points and getting 10 assists as a point guard, that's, you know, that's something that a lot of guys can do. But it's the rebounds that's so impressive, and then, of course, such a high number of points for him as well.
It's really hard this time of year because, you know, you can't tell the level of commitment to winning that teams have. The Blazers beat the Spurs last night in a game which a lot of young guys played, and the Spurs at the end said it doesn't matter. Is the season too long?
Well, you know, if they want a shorter season, then the guys have to be willing to take less money. So I guess they better not complain about it. And plus the fact, you know, I hear these guys say, oh, my God, I'm playing 36 minutes a game. You know, it's tough out there. Oh, my God. I mean, I just said you get no sympathy or empathy from me for sure, because, I mean, what we went through and the travel that we had to do and the 4 and 5 nights all the time, which they very rarely ever do, and 3 and 3 nights, all, you know, many, many times. And then traveling by commercial and not going on charters and what we had to do, renting cars, and we didn't have buses and everything else shuttled us around and private jets. I mean, it's just crazy for people to be talking about, you know, how tough it is. I just can't relate to that. The last time I checked, it was a 48-minute game. So I said, hey, well, if you're playing 36 minutes, then maybe you should only get 3/4 of your salary because you're only playing 3/4 of the game. I mean, one season I averaged 47 minutes for the season, and another, like, most of the time I was up over 40, 42 or so. And to be honest with you, this thing about the resting, I can't relate to that either. I never wanted to – I wanted to play. I love playing. Why do I want to rest? I wanted to play. So now it's a whole different mindset in the way that they're approaching. And I guess the reason is that they have so much money invested in these players that they don't want to take a chance of wearing them down and having them get injuries and keeping them healthy for the playoffs, because that's what it's about. And so it's a total different mindset that guys are approaching this with, or coaches are approaching it, or teams are approaching it. And, you know, you have to accept what it is. It's not something I can relate to.
Great talent obviously rules the day. But when you look around at the coaches in the NBA, which guy do you say, if Rick Barry owns a team, who are we hiring to be the coach of that team?
Okay, you had to get it back because I was just trying to tell my wife and Clifford in the background they were a little noisy.
Yeah, they're fine.
Repeat the question.
If Rick Barry is hiring a coach to coach his NBA team and you can't coach it, Rick, who are you hiring?
Well, here's the thing. Okay, unless you're at practice, unless you're in the huddle, unless you're hearing what a coach is saying and how he's approaching things, it's a guess as to how good a coach he really and truly is. It really, truly is. You know, you can make a fairly educated guess, but do you really know how good a coach he is just by watching on the sideline? I don't think you have the really definitive answer. I mean, certainly right now, if you wanted to take someone as young, it would be pretty, you know, hard-pressed not to take Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
And what he's done with the Warriors and the way he's dealt with them. And what I was impressed with him, and again, I'm not in the huddles and stuff, although now they got those microphones back in the huddles. You see, that gives you a little bit more of an insight. They stopped that after our 75 series when Casey Jones was in the huddle and he didn't look real good and Bernie Bickerstaff was coaching the team. And now they're back to doing it. That gives you a little more insight. I was really impressed with the way Steve Kerr talked to his team, approached his team, his demeanor, especially for a young coach coming in. Very, very impressive. So I would, if I had to go out and actually give you the answer to your question, as I say, it's not definitive, but I would say, you know, at the top of the list for me would probably be Steve Kerr. Another guy I'm very impressive with, that I've been impressed with from what I've seen, is one of the rare things that has happened, is a college coach to make the transition and look like he really is going to be a great pro coach, and that's Brad out of Boston. He's done a heck of a job.
Rick Barry with us, Hall of Famer. Could you have played for anybody, or was there a certain coach that you that understood you better than others?
I had some really great coaches. You know, I've had an incredible coach in college. I mean, my father was a coach who was the one that set the foundation for me, is the one most responsible, I think. And then my college coach, Bruce Hale, got me prepared. I mean, very few guys come out of college. I made first team all pro when I came out of college, first team all pro as a 21-year-old. I mean, so I had to learn something to get myself prepared properly for the NBA, and that was through my college coach. And then as far as the NBA goes, I mean, I had some terrific coaches. Obviously, Al Addles did a great job, a former player who did a great job with our championship team and went really deep using a lot of players. And something that Steve Kerr is not reluctant to do either. A lot of similarities between the Warriors championship team of 2 years ago and our team. I actually wrote a story about that when I was writing for the San Francisco Examiner during the playoffs that year. And so it was really interesting. And then also it's a situation where some of these coaches, I question some of these coaches. I just don't know what they're watching, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, when you get to the point where you let it be so much one-on-one and you don't have your players committed to playing defense and you're not playing unselfish type basketball, that's why I think the Cavaliers learned that. 2 years ago, it was like LeBron and no one else. When I charted that series, I wrote after the second game, there's not a chance in the world that the Cleveland Cavaliers can beat the Warriors in this series the way they're playing. It was with no pass, one pass, that was it. And it wasn't team basketball. It wasn't being played the way it needed to be played. And so you have to play the game that way. Unselfishness on offense, moving the basketball, put the egos aside, make the commitment to defense. If you do that, you give yourself a chance. And here's the big thing, is that you talk about the coaches. The reality of it is in all team sports, the three most important factors for success, who do you draft, who do you get in free agency, and who do you trade for? It's all about the players. And then you hope you get a coach that doesn't screw it up and utilizes them as effectively as possible. And that's the biggest problem that you find with a lot of coaches today. They get stuck into having their style of the way they want the game played, and they force the players to play that way. You can do that defensively, and still you got to still be aware of what they can and can't do, because you can't full court press if you don't have guys that are smart and know how to do it properly. The same thing offensively. You don't just stick in an offense and hope and make these guys play in an offense that isn't taking advantage of the skills that they have. I think you always have to adapt to be able to take advantage. It'd be like having a thoroughbred racehorse and you're going to make a pull a plow. It'd be like having a business and you have a guy who's the best salesman you have and you put him in research. It makes no sense. But yet that happens all the time. I've watched it happen. I've watched some of my boys be involved in their basketball careers where they weren't utilized properly. One of the greatest examples I give is Dale Ellis, a great shooter. He was playing for the Dallas Mavericks and Dick Motta never used him properly. And he goes up and becomes an all-star player, leads the league in three-point shooting. Wow, he went up there and somebody actually put in an offense that utilized him properly. It happens a lot. It's crazy.
You mentioned draft, trade, and free agency. What does Portland do, given that they've had trouble getting free agents to come play here?
Well, because everybody wants to go now where they have a chance to win. I mean, and you know, if they don't think they have an opportunity to really win, that's why it's so critical for you to do the drafting and get the good players to establish the fact that you have a chance to win. I mean, obviously from a fan standpoint and a base standpoint, the support of the team, I mean, you can't find much better place than Portland. Those fans are unbelievable up there. Your fans are incredible. And I remember how we went up, played, you know, exhibition games before testing the market to see if it was any good. And I always remember how tough the fans were in Portland when they finally got their franchise. And they've been a great franchise for many, many decades. And so that's what you have to do. And then you might have an opportunity, because if the other players know that they have a chance to win, they can go to a nice place to live. I mean, it's a heck of an area. And now you've got a chance. But without that, they're not going to go there. They're going to go someplace where they think they can win, and they want to join what? Other outstanding players. Now, that seems to be the modus operandi, right? You go and you play with some other great players. If you have to, you take some less money, but now the money is so crazy, they don't even have to take less money. There's so much money out there, so it's not even a money factor anymore. So the key to it is you've got to make wise decisions with your draft picks. And a lot of teams, I've said this a lot, and I know scouts probably get mad at me, but I'm not naming names, but there's guys out there who wouldn't know talent if it bit them in the butt. They get so hung up on athleticism. I tell you what, you take 12 guys that are great athletes and give me 12 guys who know how to play, and I'll be happy to play you and play you for money. Because the guys who know how to play are the ones that are going to wind up winning. And you're going to have some guys who also are pretty good athletes, but I want the guy who knows how to play, who has the feel for the game, who knows what the game is about. That's what it's like. So now I'm saying my prayers and hoping that somebody realizes that there's a kid out there right now that has a chance to do that. That would be an absolute steal for somebody. And that's my youngest son. My youngest son could really play. Nobody got to see what he could do because he was stuck into a role of coming off the bench. He was sixth man of the year at Florida team. But my son could do so many things that he's not been shown that he's been able to do. I mean, that he's capable of doing because of the way the team played, and he sacrificed. And he did what he did, and they got to the Elite Eight. I thought they should have got to the Final Four. But this is a young man that, you know, I think I got a pretty good idea of what it takes to be a pro basketball player. And I think I've been right about all my other boys. I said every one of those guys could play, and they all have. And this guy can play too. And so somebody can be smart, pick him up, and let him develop and give him a chance and not have to be in the lab working on his nuclear engineering and spending all his time in the classroom and let him play basketball. God only knows how good he's going to get.
The engineering can wait. Let's let him have a career
first.
That's
exactly right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, go play ball. Have some fun. I mean, and he's a brilliant kid. He'd be an unbelievable teammate. He knows the game. He's the ideal kind of player for a coach. There's not a coach in the league that wouldn't, I think, be thrilled to have a kid that can play the way he plays and would be fit in the way that he would fit in and do the kind of things that he does.
All right. You grow up, you're named Rick. I'm named John. You get called in a crowd. You probably turn around 50 times as a kid because there's a lot of other Ricks in the crowd. Why'd you name him Canyon?
Well, my wife, who was an All-America basketball player and actually the only one to have her jersey retired at William & Mary, and a brilliant athlete, great athlete, and a brilliant person, too. That's why he gets the smarts from. He's never myself. Was the academic All-America of the year in Division I college basketball, number one academic player in the Division I, for the first team. And so we're doing on the trip down the Grand Canyon with our family, a raft trip, which is an amazing trip. I highly recommend it to anybody to go and do that. It's spectacular, absolutely awesome. I think I might be pregnant. And we said, wow, okay. And so we said, we got to start thinking of names. And so here we are, we're in the Grand Canyon. Well, if we get a boy, let's call him Canyon. So that's how it happened.
That's awesome. Before I cut you loose, if he had made the Final Four, I was there with the Ducks covering this thing. They play this game inside a 77,000-seat football stadium. The stage, the floor is raised 4 feet off the ground. Nobody could shoot. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I don't know about playing in that kind of an environment. To me, I mean, my focus is always on the basket. I don't think what's behind it should make any difference, to be honest with you. I just think the stage and stuff was such a big, well, you said it was up on the stage.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the stage itself. You know what I'm talking about,
right?
The overall environment. The shooting was brutal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But they also took some of the worst shots. I mean, that kid from from North Carolina, he took some of the most god-awful shots. I'm surprised. I mean, that Roy let him stay in the game. I mean, he was almost shooting them out of the championship.
It's
incredible how bad the shots were that he took. And then, oh, my God, the free throw line. Yeah, my son shoots almost 90% from the free throw line. So, give him the ball, let him drive and get to the free throw line, the game's over. So, I mean, no, that was embarrassing almost. It really was. It was such a horrendous performance offensively for both teams going down the stretch. It really, truly was. But, Oregon did a great job and, had an opportunity, a golden opportunity to do something. And, they were able to – they let it slip out of their hands. They really did.
Yeah, Carolina tried to give it to them.
Yeah, Carolina tried to give it to them, and Gonzaga should never have gotten there. I mean, my God, West Virginia had them. I mean, they let them off the hook as well. But that's why you play the games. That's why it's so great, and that's why the NCAA tournament, the best team doesn't always win the championship. Because of one-game elimination, anything can happen.
Rick Barry, you're the best. I really appreciate you.
Hey, all right. And all the best to you, Blazer fans. I wish you well, but sorry, I got to root for the Warriors. I'm sorry about that. But maybe you'll get my son up there. Then I'll be up there. I'll come up and visit. I'll do some fishing. Visit. It'd be a great place to go fishing. It'd be awesome for me to come up there and do that, watch my son play.
All right, you're saying if Canyon Barry is drafted by the Blazers, that Rick Barry will be a mainstay at the arena.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I don't care where they drift, just get them up there. They're going to have 17 roster spots if they sign the new collective bargaining agreement. So get them cheap if you had to. He'd be the greatest teammate. He'll be somebody that will turn into a heck of a player. The fans would love him. He's great in the community. He's a great kid. And, yes, I would definitely be up there because fishing is my new passion, and there's great fishing up in that area to get up there. So I would definitely be up there on many, many occasions without question.
Rick Barry, thank you.
All righty, take care.
There he is, NBA star, 12-time NBA and ABA All-Star and a Hall of Famer. He's a shy guy, Kiki.
Yeah, total introvert.
He doesn't think much of himself or, his kids, but,
He's like he's got a little LeVar Ball in him. Just a little.
A little bit.
Just a little. Just a scoosh.
Not bad, though.
No,
LeVar Ball
not
is,
at all. He's off the charts.
LeVar
but.
Ball is distractive. This guy, I see him as an overbearing, supportive father.
Yeah, I love it.
Not an overbearing bad guy. I like Rick Barry because he's blunt. If you missed any of that interview, I'll podcast it. I'll tweet it. We'll post it on Oregon Live. We'll put it on 750 The Game. I want you to leave it here. You're going to hear a lot about my friend Rusty Houston in the next half hour or so because Rusty Houston is basically sponsoring the last half hour of today's show. He is my Farmers Insurance agent. I met him in line at a coffee shop, and I turned around and I said, hey, I got an insurance question for you. Turns out the guy could save me money. I made money in line at the coffee shop. What I'm saying is Rusty Houston can save you money and give you great service. Whether you need life insurance, homeowner's insurance, automobile insurance, he's looking out for me. He can look out for you as well. Don't put this on the back burner any longer. Call him on this commercial break. 503-372-9543. That's 503-372-9543.
Hello, I'm John Lovitz, and you're listening to John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Thanks, John Lovitz. I also like to thank Rusty Houston of Rusty Houston Farmers Insurance for his support of the Bald Faced Truth Foundation. It's a great insurance agent. He's my insurance agent. Let's be real. He has our homeowner's insurance, our automobile insurance, life insurance. He's got it all. If you are in the market for insurance, or even if you have insurance and you think, hey, you know, am I getting the best deal I could possibly get? Give Rusty a call at 503-372-9543, 372-9543. And don't be that guy that, you know, for me, life insurance is important. It's not something you want to think about all the time, right? It's kind of a spooky thing. And I've got friends who are like, I don't want to get life insurance because I don't want to think about dying. You be laying there on the ground going, I wish I would have called the insurance agent. You want to make sure that your family's taken care of. You want to make sure that all of your insurance needs are taken care of. Call Rusty Houston, Rusty Houston Farmers Insurance. Again, 372-9543. That's 503-372-9543. Kiki's here. She's going to read some news.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stand by for news.
This is Kiki Reads the News on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Do you have insurance? Yeah, you have car insurance, homeowner's insurance.
I've got it all. Make that automatic payment every month. Yep. I've only had to use it once, though.
Here's how I knew. Okay, I was doing insurance with a company. I'm not going to name the company. But it had the word family in the name.
Gotcha.
Not only did the agent not tell me, like, I call him if there was a claim.
Mm-hmm.
We had a tree fall and hit the house. I call him. We have a pipe break. I call him. I say, is this something I should report? He never helped me. He never said, hey, you know what? If you report this, maybe your rates will go up
or
whatever.
Right.
I'm telling you, I talked to Rusty, who I was just talking about. The very first thing I said to him was, he looked at my history and he goes, hey, you know, maybe this pipe breaking you shouldn't have called because it probably raised your rate a little bit and maybe you should have. And I was like, where were you when I needed you? And then he goes, and by the way, you're paying too much money on this policy. It was a rental house policy that we had. And he goes, you're paying too much money on this. Let me take a look at it. So, yes, call the guy.
Yeah, it's always tricky when you have that debate of like, well, do I pay the deductible? Is it better for me to just pay this out of pocket? Because so that's awesome that you
need
have
that. An advocate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And don't let them fool you. If they have the name family in their name of their insurance company, it doesn't mean they're family.
Okay.
Rusty Houston, Farmers Insurance, 503-372-9543.
I love it.
All right. That's my spiel.
I love it. So in news out of Ohio, a 200-year-old tree made famous in the Shawshank Redemption was chopped down over the weekend, which is really sad. So now you may remember during a pivotal scene at the end of the movie, Morgan Freeman's character, Red, is reading a letter from Tim Robbins' character, Andy Dufresne. Pivotal scene. So underneath that awesome tree, 200-year-old tree. Take a listen.
I could use a good man to help me get my project on wheels. I'll keep an eye out for you and the chessboard ready. Remember, Red, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies. I will be hoping that this letter finds you, and finds you well. Your friend, Andy.
I love that.
Isn't that awesome? So now what happened was, back in 2011, there was actually a windstorm that basically kind of split the tree in half.
Yeah.
So the last couple of years have not been good for this tree. And then it started to rot. So the owner decided to just chop it down. He's actually going to make a table out of it.
The CEO of United Airlines came and cut it down.
Essentially. But that's sad. It was such an iconic scene. And that's such a great movie. I had actually forgotten it was nominated for 7 Academy Awards. but didn't win any because it kind of ran up against Forrest Gump that year. But
it might be the best movie ever.
It's one of those films that when it's on and I'm flipping through the channels, it's one of the ones that's really hard for me to just, you know, I usually sit down and watch.
So many great lines in that movie.
I guess it comes down to a simple choice, really. Get busy living or get busy dying.
Get busy living or get busy dying.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those that you watch like once a year, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so
I understand you're a man that knows how to get things.
I'm known to locate certain things from time to time.
Andy Dufresne, who crawled through a river of shit and came out clean on the other side.
Just some great lines.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. So anyway, the tree's gone. It's going to be a table. So, you know, if it's up for sale, I'll keep you posted on that.
I'm Andy Dufresne.
Wife killing banker. Why'd you do it?
I didn't, since you asked.
You can fit right in. Everybody in here is innocent. Didn't you know that? Hey, what you in here for?
Didn't do it. Lawyer fucked me.
Such a great movie.
You know what's made that movie great is like it's a movie on prison, but it's like it's got some poetry to
family.
It.
Family. It's a family. Yeah. 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 Anyway.
I'll never get out of here.
One day when I got a long white beard and two or three marbles rolling around upstairs, they let me out.
I'll tell you where I'd go. To Watanil.
To what?
To Watanil. It's in Mexico. A little place on the Pacific Ocean. You know what the Mexicans say about the Pacific? They say it has no memory. That's where I want to live the rest of my life.
I want to see the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. Do I have to go to the end where he's on his boat and he walks up. Ah, great movie. Sorry if you didn't see that. I just kind of spoiled it, but you should have seen it. It's been out since 1994. Yeah.
Spoiler.
So, spoiler.
If you haven't seen it in the last 29 years, 25 years.
Spoiler, the Titanic didn't end up well either. Yes. In other news, John, from time to time, you and I have talked about gambling. You know, you had a little issue the last time you played with a dealer.
She tried to
You had to go to the Eye in the Sky, correct?
She didn't know what she was doing.
Yeah.
She's the dealer. She should know what she was doing.
Absolutely. Okay, so there's
incompetent.
There's a gentleman by the name of Jan Flatto. He's got a very strange name, if you don't mind me saying.
Jan, perhaps?
I don't know. It's spelled Jan. I'm going with Jan.
All right.
If you look at his picture.
Like Jan Stenerud?
Look at his picture. I tweeted it out. Kiki Reads News. Look at this guy. So anyway, so he's at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. And he is playing the slot machine. And he's put all the money in.
Uh-oh.
So he's playing on his money.
All right.
Now, a 35-year-old female decides to kind of nuzzle up next to this guy and befriend him.
Right.
So, of course, he obliges. She pushes the button. Now, she wins.
Okay.
Right? So it's a $100,000 jackpot. So
she didn't win it. That's his money.
Well, all the people come over. They go and they look at the Eye in the Sky because she pushed the button.
She wins.
She won. And she stone cold, you know what, him, because she left the casino with a $50,000 check and $50,000 cash and didn't give him anything. But that's how it went down. The casino said because she actually pushed the button, even though it was his money.
She screwed him after all.
Totally did. Not the way he was hoping, if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah.
That's a $100,000 lesson. So if you're out there and you want the money.
Don't let anybody else push the button.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that they would do that. I thought since it was his money. But anyway, so that guy.
That's a weird thing.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. It's raising a lot of questions in my mind right now.
Mm-hmm. Like,
I mean, I just. Okay. So I was at the roulette table with the idiot roulette dealer who just didn't know what she was doing. And she didn't like me reaching across the table. And she said, let me put the money down. So if the money hits, it's hers. But if she's the dealer, what? If I'm handing it to the dealer, what? No.
Well,
what if I hand it to
different.
Someone else? What if I hand the money to you and say, can you put this on number 7?
Yeah,
and you take
that
$5 chip and you put it on 7 and it hits. It's your money?
Apparently to this casino.
Yeah.
I don't know. But apparently the way that the article reads too, I just thought was hilarious because it says she was nuzzled up next to him.
Our street correspondent Parker has come back in from the streets and he is happens to also be our expert on gambling and he's here. Parker, what's up?
Well, first of all, I'm 18, so never gambled in my life.
Okay.
But, it's all good. No, I was just going to say, if you walked in to a casino and somebody was about to do the slot machine and you pulled that lever.
Just run around pushing the buttons?
Right. And you ended up winning there's no risk for loss for you. It's not your money. And so if you if you walked in and started pushing like these buttons and you end up winning, does that mean that it's your money?
Yeah, I think this is bad territory.
Well, Jan is pretty upset about it too.
Jan is a guy. I'm pretty sure that's Jan. Jan.
Okay, but look at it.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm going with Jan. Yep.
Jan Stenerud is on line five saying that it's Jan. Okay.
Look at his picture. He looks like a Jan. I'm going with Jan.
Next story, please. Please so get to the next story.
Okay, out of New York.
By the way, Parker, did they figure out what's going on with the building?
So I gave the number to the lady down there. She hasn't texted me back, but I'm assuming that it hasn't fallen because, because
we can see it.
Yeah, we can see
it. We don't see any dust balls.
That's good reporting there.
Yeah.
I can tell you from our vantage point where they had the street blocked earlier, the police are no longer there, and there's just a little bit of tape around the building. They did have a press conference with, I believe it was Dan Salzman, about a half an hour ago, and it looks like everything is getting kind of back to normal.
You know what he said? He said, all the building's safe, and we're going to hold a city council meeting in there, and all the protesters are welcome to come inside.
Wow.
Yeah. They should have the anarchists go in there and do the site check after the...
How come we don't call that the eBay building? Because it's got the eBay on the top of the building.
Yeah.
That's actually what the lady down there called it, and all the police officers. So I came down, and I started talking to the lady, and asked her a few questions, and then everybody wants to know, you know, why is this 18-year-old, 13-year-old looking kid asking these... these questions.
Because I sent them down there.
Aren't you supposed to be in school?
I sent them down there. All right. What else you got?
Yeah, this is an interesting story out of New York. There's a gentleman who formed a company called Same Old Line Dudes. This is what this guy does. He waits in line for people. Like right now, he's killing it because of Hamilton tickets. Now, he actually earned $14,000 in one day when the iPhone was released, one of the times. So now he has this business. He's hired a bunch of his friends. But I just thought this was an interesting concept. I was trying to think, under what scenario would I actually pay, you know, pretty decent money to have someone stand in line?
Janet Jackson tickets, 1989.
Oh, wow.
I was in the parking lot of Tower Records overnight. I stood in line for someone else. I didn't really want to see Janet Jackson, but I was a college kid, and I figured, what the heck? What the heck? I'll just go stand in line and get the tickets. I should have been paid for that experience.
You should have.
Lost a night of sleep for Janet Jackson.
And you didn't even go to the show?
Nah, I didn't care about Janet Jackson.
Well, for 4 hours, it's $85. For 24 hours, $485. And there is an additional $5 charge if there's inclement weather. I just thought it was really interesting because now he has this whole team of people that they just go around New York City and they wait in line for people. They also can, I guess cronuts back there are a big deal. Have you ever had a cronut? I've never had one. The croissant donut hybrid.
I didn't know what you were talking about.
Oh.
So no.
Oh, well, apparently they're a big deal back east. And they will actually wait in line, get you a cronut, and deliver it to you as well. So I guess if you have money to burn.
This is a scam.
It's like
Uber. Hey, this is legit.
Yeah.
I'm looking at his website right here. This is the kind of information I like to bring you people.
So it is legit?
Yeah.
I think he just made up an industry. That's not a business.
He's laughing all the way to the
bank.
Is,
if this is Shark Tank, get out of the room. You're wasting our time.
He can also get you Saturday Night Live tickets. He knows the ins and outs. He's the ticket guy. You always have to have a guy like that. Don't you have a guy that, like, if you need something, you're like, I better call that guy.
I'm that guy.
Oh, that's true.
For a lot of other people, believe
you're
me.
You're my guy.
Believe me, when the Blazers made the playoffs, my phone blew up. I'm the guy. I got somebody during this show. I have taken care of somebody's yard waste recycling.
Mm-hmm.
I have, let's see, what else? Let's go down my list. I have... somebody asked me about going to Ducks practice on Saturday, if I could get them up close. Somebody asked me for a yard waste bin. Also,
that's really weird.
I have two. I'm the only guy in the neighborhood who has two.
So can you spare your yard? Oh, okay, so I got you, because they're doing yard work. All right. Actually, that's not a bad idea.
What people do is the whole neighborhood knows I have two. So they all go, hey, can I get the extra bin? Which really turns out I never put the yard waste bin out in the wintertime. Like, unless like summer, it's got yard clippings and pruning or whatever. So I very rarely put it out. So I generally have two empties.
Wow.
So I'm the guy who can get you a yard waste bin if you're in the market for it.
Oh, very good. I do have some really good news to report on a personal note.
Yeah.
The woman who lives behind me, who Let's just say she and I were a bit at odds. We didn't get along well. Let's just say that. So I noticed...
Her fault or your fault?
Her fault. Her fault, 100%. She hates my yard lights. She cut my yard lights twice. I repaired them. I MacGyvered them, got them back working, and she said that my lights were too bright. She also called animal control when my dogs were barking, when in fact my dogs were not barking. So, but anyway, so I kept looking, and I could see that her shades were drawn, and I thought, I haven't seen her in a while. And I had a moment of, I hope she didn't fall, or you know what I mean? Like something, because she was an older woman.
Yeah.
An older, mean woman. She moved. That's the big update.
I thought it was going to be you guys found common ground.
No, she moved. So I don't know if I should be really excited, because careful what you wish for, because I don't know what the new neighbors are going to be like. Like they could be rowdy or, you know, I don't know. But I think the first step is I'm pretty excited because the mean lady behind me is no longer there. So there's that. That's exciting.
The mean lady moved away.
She did. That's really big in my world.
She's got a story, too.
Sure she does.
She's going, I escaped.
Yeah, well.
I escaped from that other mean lady.
Yes.
Wonder what she calls you.
I have no idea. I can't say what I called her.
Well,
but isn't that exciting?
That is okay. That's real news. You kind of buried that one.
I know. I should have led with that. I should have led with
that. Man missing on tier 2, cell 245. Dufresne.
Oh, my holy God.
Andy Dufresne got away.
Oh, yeah. You learn like a lot of good stuff here. And my last little shout out, I wanted to say this today. Today is Pet Appreciation Day. And I know, John, you are really excited about this because all you ever do is talk about how much you love your dogs. And I don't know what you're going to do for Bella and Duke today when you get home. But it is, in fact, National Pet Appreciation Day. So today is the day to, you know, shower them with some extra doggy bones or, you know, I don't know.
Look. Pet Appreciation Day, that's every day. I feed them. I water them. They live in a warm home. You know? Pet Appreciation Day.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for reading the news.
Yes.
Thank you, Parker, for being on the streets for us. That's what happens when you intern here. We send you out on the streets. I want to thank our production team. And Hefe, thank you as well. If you're in the market for insurance, Rusty Houston Farmers Insurance, 503-372-9543. He can help you with automobile insurance, homeowners insurance, business insurance, life insurance. He's my go-to. I use him. He saves me money, and I know I'm insured. I have that peace of mind. 503-372-9543. Rusty Houston Farmers Insurance.